Okay, let's go ahead and get started. Thank you very much. This is grad 592. Welcome to our open class. We have several students that are signed up, and then we have quite a few members of the public who have asked to join us, and we're glad to have you here. The purpose of the class this fall is to talk about Western water law, Western water institutions, policies, with a little bit of twist of the politics added to it. So the students especially, I would prefer to see everybody right now if I can. So if you would unstop your video. Thank you. Welcome. So, we're so glad to have you. For the students that are attending the class, I'm going to ask that you keep your video on for the whole class so we know you're paying attention since that is part of your grade. With respect to questions that come up, if you use the chat button or the Q&A button at the bottom of the screen while Becky's talking, then I can either convey those questions to her or we can wait until she finishes her presentation and we'll go from there. Now, most of the speakers would rather you interrupt them with questions. And so if you have a pertinent question, I'll be happy to interrupt Becky. But it's harder in this format, so we'll make do with what we have. Last week, the students introduced themselves, and we had several other folks who joined us and introduced themselves. But I failed to introduce you to the people behind the camera who are making all of this possible, and that is our staff. And head of that staff is Nancy Grice at the Water Center. Hi, Nancy.
Hi.
And we can go ahead and introduce your students for us.
Okay, all right. So, Allie Altmore, Cameron Dennison, and Molly Smith. And if it wasn't for these three amazing student interns, this GRAD 592 maybe wouldn't have happened and be going as smoothly as it is. So thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys. I appreciate that. So the format is we have today Becky Mitchell. We're going to let her give her presentation and then take questions for, she's online for however long you've got, and she's got lots of expertise. And so stick around after her talk and ask all the questions with respect to water policies and politics in Colorado. So I'm going to introduce Becky. She is the director of the Colorado Water Conservation Board. The Conservation Board is the policy, water policy making agency in Colorado. Becky has had years and years, decades of experience on water issues, started as an engineer from, I was going to say MIT, that's not right, from Mines, Colorado School of Mines. And then took the same kind of path I did and decided to do policy work rather than the technical side of things. So she's been involved in a lot in the Department of Natural Resources. Becky is responsible for the writing of the Colorado Water Plan and working with the roundtables and IBCC with respect to that. So with that, Becky, I'm going to turn it over to you. Thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you, Jennifer. And I should mention before we get started that, Jennifer, you all have a pretty classy lady teaching you in this class. She's not only a predecessor and a mentor, but truly a friend. And so when she asked me to do this, I gladly said yes and was honored. And you will be better for taking her class, that's for sure. So I am going to... I'm going to try to share my screen if that works. Hold on. Give me a second because that takes a minute. Can you see my screen and still see me? I think so, right?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So perfect. So As Jennifer mentioned, I am the director of the Water Conservation Board, and we're the agents. We're a division within the Department of Natural Resources. And so I'm going to talk about some of the other agencies that we work with also to kind of let you know the lay of the land with that. But we're a lot the policymaking agency. And really, the Water Conservation Board represents each major water basin in the state and the Denver metro area. And we really try to share the effort of using water wisely and protecting water for our future generations with that's our primary goal. But really, we share that effort with some other state agencies too. So I'm going to talk about that a little bit. The CWCB was created over 80 years ago and remains Colorado's most comprehensive water information resource. We work on a broad range of topics, and I'm going to go into those. You'll really, as I talk about these, I hope what you think is, well, first of all, I hope you think I want to work a place like that. But then I also hope you think, how do they get this all done? It's such a broad range of topics. But I think when we talk about water, I think it's important to always remember that, you have to think broadly, because you can't, it just can't be a point solution. We have to think broader than that. And so our program, we have a broad range of programs, and then we also provide technical and financial assistance. That's been part of our mission, but it's even more so since Colorado's water plan. I am going to kind of show you if I can figure out how to move forward on this thing. Hold on just a sec. There we go. So we have a board of directors, and I mentioned that we represent each river basin along with the metropolitan region. We only have a staff of 50. And then we also work with the Interbasin Compact Committee, and I can get into some of the details of that. And then our really local level input comes from the 9 basin roundtables. Again, the 8 river basins and the metropolitan area. All of this, these folks are working to work within our mission to conserve, develop, and protect and manage Colorado's water for present and future generations. Interestingly enough, that picture that you see is all of the members of the board. That was taken the last day of our board meeting, which was the last time in March, which was probably the last time that we were able to be together in a group. It's been a bit for that. So it's a pretty fine group of people from varying backgrounds. If you and there's some of the political piece of it, or not political, but some of kind of the statutory requirements is that no more than 5 from one political party, but really the interest is to make sure that we have not even diversity just on politics, but diversity on interest and expertise. And so you have folks that are focused on recreation, or focused on the environment, or focused on industry, or as some sort of industry, agriculture, something like that, or representing municipality. And so I think it's pretty interesting to see that this group of people, and they're all still smiling, even with their vast differences. And I think that represents water in Colorado. So I want to get into, I mentioned talking a little bit about what we do, and I want you to think back about that last slide and me saying that there are 50 people within our office doing this. So when you hear me talk about these next few things, I want you to remember that it's 50 people. And so as you think about that, think about none of this happens without others. Humans can only do so much singularly. And so we have to figure out how to work together. So one of the focuses of the agency, and these are not listed in priority, I want to make sure we say that and all the time, is but one of our major focuses is supply. And so when we think about wise and thoughtful use of our water supply, we have to think about planning and management. And that's incredibly critical to ensure that we have a secure future for our state. I'm going to get into the water plan, and that's a lot of the mission of the water plan. But our state's water supply consists of both surface water and groundwater. And those supply systems are heavily dependent on complex interactions with geography, weather, the laws, regulation, and all of those influence how much water is available for beneficial use. And so I think that that's important to remember. It's you don't just see it and it becomes in our system. There's a lot involved with that. So as we talk about our future, the CWCB, myself included, but I would hope all the staff, we envision a Colorado that balances municipal and industrial and agriculture and environment and recreational water needs, and then really promotes cooperation among all those water users. We try to support this vision by sharing our goals and evaluating all of our goals holistically, and then really develop balanced water supply strategies. So when I talk about supply, some of the things that I'm talking about is long-range planning. Planning is incredibly important to what our future looks like. And so we have a few things, and I'm going to get into more details on pieces of it later, but our long-range planning, our water plan, and some of the technical work that goes into that. But when we also talk about supply, we talk about demand management. And I don't know, it's hard because this is a virtual class, so I can only see four people at once, unfortunately, on the side of my screen. But demand management has been a big focus in the state right now, and how we potentially could conserve water to meet some of our interstate goals is something that is definitely part of our supply conversations. We also talk about land use and water planning and how those correlate. So we have some expertise focused on that. We also talk about and are focused on within our agency urban water efficiency and as an additional supply. Another focus is alternative transfer mechanisms, and that is specifically related to agriculture. And what could we do what can we do to not buy and dry agricultural land, but what can we do to partner with our agricultural providers across the state and really look at ways to share. And another focus when we look at supply is weather modification. And that's when you hear about cloud seeding, some people are pro or against. But we look at cloud seeding as a potential option to add more supply. And then I can't talk about supply without talking about storage. So one of the focuses, not only in Colorado's water plan, and I'm going to get into that in a bit, but is needing storage across the state. That's how we efficiently capture and use, capture at times of wealth and use at times of drought. And so storage is critical to all those conversations. And then finally, but last but not least, is and it wouldn't seem like our expertise when you look at, we're primarily a policy agency, but we do have some focus on reuse. And so we work with one of our sister agencies on that. Now I'll talk about that sister agency in a bit. So when we talk about supply, it's not just one word supply. There's a lot that goes into that. And that's kind of all of those pieces. One of the other things that the agency focuses on is ecosystem health. That's not just focusing on the environment and trees and grass. It's a much greater thought process than that. So when we think about Colorado and their mountain watersheds, those have a strong influence on both quality and quantity. And primarily, the Water Conservation Board has been focused on quantity, but we have to start thinking about the interaction of quality and quantity. And that knowing that a healthy watershed provides an ecosystem that, and with that ecosystem benefiting the ecological process, we can have potentially more water available if it's of higher quality. So we continue to work with local and state governments to really focus on those sort of things. Sorry, each time one of these comes in, I get a little distracted. But but really, we're recognizing that ecosystem health does really play into that quantity component. And so how do we do that? How do we do that? How do we make sure that we protect and restore our natural ecosystems for wildlife and our diverse plant communities? And when I say wildlife, I mean fish too. So some of the things that we work on that focus on that is watershed health initiatives, watershed health plans, also in-stream flows. And we do work with salinity and making sure that we're dealing with salinity issues. We also focus on wild and scenic within the Water Conservation Board. So wild and scenic really is one of those programs primarily, trying to figure out how to say this politically correctly, Jennifer, I don't want to disappoint my mentor, but really looking at ways that we can preserve the environment, but also preserve our ability to develop. And so that's one of the focuses on that we focus on in our agency. We also, with that, make sure that we are doing what we can to protect and bring back endangered species. We have lots of expertise in that. And we've also had some pretty amazing things that have happened even recently. So that's a big deal. We also know that Colorado wouldn't be what it is. We think about the ecosystem health and how much that people view Colorado is this outdoorsy kind of place. But we also know that we couldn't have that without industry. How we fund these things is a lot without industry, is with industry. So water has and will continue to be. I don't see science changing that much, that water is not always going to be a critical resource for nature and people, as well as an economic commodity. And so it's water is used in almost every industry. So if you're in college, you probably know that it takes water to make beer. But we also know that it takes water to make carrots and alfalfa to feed our cows and that sort of thing. And so we know that water is important for agriculture, food, and beverage production. And it's also, it's a part of industrial processes across the board. So, and it's also critical for energy generation. So companies across Colorado have these unique water footprints and require different amounts and different types of water for their supply chains. And so we always have to think about the agricultural industries, energy industries, recreational industries, and the tourism industry. So those are all some of our focus as we're thinking about the future. And then one of the more difficult things we do, because you can't plan for hazards every day, but I think when you think about hazards, the pre-planning is what makes a difference. And so in Colorado, if you've been here for any period of time, or if you've turned on your TV today, you probably know the situation that we're in. And so Coloradans are very familiar with threats and impacts of natural disaster, including drought. We're in a drought right now. Wildfires, if you don't know about those, you're not paying attention. But we also experience floods and tornadoes. In the past decade, we've experienced unprecedented flood of 2013 that resulted in nearly $4 billion of damages. And we have major wildfires, 2010, 2012, 2013, 2018, and now 2020. Throw a pandemic in that, and it's pretty interesting times that we're working in. And so we know that that these natural hazards will continue to impact Colorado, but ultimately we have to push to be more thoughtful and resilient, and how do we manage that? And so when I talk about hazards and what we do within the Water Conservation Board, we really look at changes in climate as a hazard, drought as a hazard, flood as a hazard, but also that fire. So that's, I know you're thinking, wow, 50 people still doing all of this? That's it? Yes. And right now they're incredibly busy. And then last, and again, not least, we have our interstate compacts, and we do a lot of work on an interstate level. And so just a bit on interstate and interstate compacts. These interstate compacts are agreements between two or more states, and they govern specific interactions among those states, and really require the consent by U.S. Congress. So we have seven major watersheds that originate in Colorado, and then we send water downstream to 19 other states. So as a result, Colorado is party to 9 interstate compacts and an international treaty with Mexico. And so we always have to partner with our downstream neighbors. That's an important part of managing our water. So we're party to a lot of those, and a significant amount of time is spent protecting those and making sure that we're planning for our future and working with our neighbors, remembering that Colorado is a headwater state. And so with that comes an incredible amount of responsibility, but not only that, but to be responsible for protecting the people of the state of Colorado and their future. And if you guys have questions on those compacts or any of those, I can definitely get into that. And when I talk about all of those things, I want to talk about kind of how we fit in to the bigger picture of what's happening within Colorado. Remembering that there's some other agencies that we work with and folks that we work with, but again, I need to say we're not a regulatory agency. Some of those folks up there are and can do things in a bit of a different way. But we work closely with Colorado Parks and Wildlife. And when I talked about our wild and scenic, the in-stream flow, managing our water resources, recreation, the recreation components of the work that we do, Colorado Parks and Wildlife is incredibly important in that process. Again, when I talked about water quality and the impact that that has on water quantity, we couldn't do that without the collaboration of the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. And so when I talked about water reuse, that was the agency that I was alluding to, that we are working together. I have to say, some of these agencies, we've been working together better than we ever have before. And I think some of that is a testament to Colorado's water plan. We also work very closely with the state engineer's office. I'm going to say something that probably isn't appropriate, but I'm going to say it anyway. But they're really the water cop of the state. Sorry, Jennifer. I know I'm already disappointing you. but really, the state engineer's office is to administer. One of their main goals is to administer water rights. And so when we talk about all of those things that we're doing, of course we have to work closely with the state engineer's office, because nobody wants to deal with violating any of their rules. And so when we talk about law and policy and the politics of it, we always try to say, okay, we need to work with these folks, but how does policy become flexible? And how do we, when the letter of the law is so firm, in so many ways. Where are those areas that we can work better together and really find creative solutions? And so oftentimes we have to rely on the Attorney General's office to interpret what we're doing. So we work closely with the Attorney General's office on many issues. Interstate compacts is one of those. The in-stream flow program is one of those. But as we look at kind of the future, we're always making sure that we run those things by the Attorney General's office. And I can't see the comments. So if you have questions, you can raise your hand at any time, Jennifer, or just unmute yourself. So I keep alluding to Colorado's water plan, and I remember this map. So this, when you see this, this is the eight river basins that I talked about. And then this metropolitan area you see in the kind of middle of that map. That's not a river basin, but that's really where the representation of kind of those Front Range water users come from. And so it's important to remember as you look at this map, we're not all just in that metro area or the South Platte area or the Arkansas area. The beauty of Colorado is the diversity of Colorado and what it looks like and what their needs are and how they want to grow into the future. And I would say you get a different answer from each of those areas. And sometimes you get a different answer when you ask an area where, what do you want to be when you grow up? Or how do you want the future to look in 20, 30, 50 years? Sometimes there's conflict within their own river basin of what that looks like. And so as we talk about Colorado's water plan, I want to express some of that so you know how difficult it was. And recognize that it's a hard job, but I think we do pretty okay, and this gets us better. So this timeline starts in 2015, but that's inaccurate. The timeline really started when an executive order came out in 2013 that said in this time period, approximately 2.5 years, you will complete a first ever Colorado water plan. And that was an interesting time. That was a summer of flood, drought, fires, pretty intense summer, that 2013, for sure. And so the executive order came out from the governor to the Water Conservation Board and said, hey, let's get this done. That's easy to say. There was not a lot in an executive order. I don't know how many of you have ever read an executive order, but it didn't drive exactly what it was supposed to be. And didn't say exactly what the end goal was. It just said, hey, do a water plan. And I think it's important to remember some of the work that had gone on prior to that 2013. There was what we called the Statewide Water Supply Initiative, and it was heavily technical, and folks very much looked at that as somewhat of our plan, but it never pushed into looking at policies and pushing different policies, or it never pushed that far. It got close, but it didn't. And so this was almost like permission to push a little bit further. And so the next 2.5 years, kind of flew by and dragged on all at the same time. And I aged significantly in those 2 years. But I think one of the important things that came out of it is that we really looked at where should this come from? And we already had a structure in place with those basin roundtables. And I show you again, you see that map right there. So there's so much local level input that, and there was a structure already available to lean on. And so I also talked about how each area wanted to maybe look a little bit different. And the South Platte doesn't have the same issues as the Yampa White. And so it was important to say, we need to make sure we get that all encompassing water plan. And so what do? You look back to those people and see what work we can have them do. Because when you talk about policy and politics and kind of changing the way that we do things, you can't do that without buy-in. And you surely can't sit in Denver and write something that will work for everyone. And so I think it's important that you look back to the expertise. And so we look back on the ground and said, okay, can we kind of divide this the state up by these river basins, and each basin have their own plan, implementation plan. And so a big component of Colorado's water plan was those being rolled up. And what were the commonalities and what were the differences? So in Colorado's water plan, and I heard that the executive summary was your homework. So I'm hoping that you guys read that at least three times. And if not, hopefully I touch on some of it for you. But so a lot of that work came from those basin implementation plans rolled up and focused on that. And then the second half of the water plan really took like this existing information and said, okay, how do we start moving forward? And that's what it did. And I'm going to get into some of the goals and some of the things that came out from that, but I'm going to want to get through the rest of this timeline first. So water plan comes out. That's great. But a water plan is nothing without a check-in. And so I happened to become the director of the agency in 2017. And the first thing I asked for was kind of a status on where we were. There are 300 individual goals within the water plan. And so we came out with the ripple effects. And that was kind of a status of where we were, what we needed to work on, where we had made progress, where we hadn't. And we realized something had been done on 65% of those 300, nearly 300 individual goals. And that's pretty amazing, if you ask me, in 2 years. But it's still, when you talk about water and you talk about hazards and you talk about protecting the state, there's not, you can't just celebrate success. You have to continue to work. And so we know that. And so in 2019, we really did the technical foundation, again for Colorado's water plan. And that was the artist formerly known as SWASI, or the Statewide Water Supply Initiative. We really decided, let's take the data out, keep it not political, and really just make data for data's sake and make sure that that's what drives how we move forward. And so in 2019, the technical update for Colorado's water plan came out. And then we also made sure that we have a path forward for a recheck on those basin implementation plans. And then saying, okay, we need to continue moving with the water plan, continue checking in, continue moving forward. And so that is currently the process that we're in right now. One of the things that I think is different, and one of the things that we've done well is, and we stole this from some municipal entities that had done it really well, but on a municipal smaller scale. And so we had to take it and say, let's look at this kind of planning, and we call it scenario planning, on a larger level. Can it be taken up to a state level? And so we look at our planning through a scenario planning based type plan. And I was looking at this today as I was preparing for this class, and I was thinking, where exactly are we right now? Because I would say a bit of a weak economy, our water supplies are low, there's some climate issues, there's high agricultural needs, but also high M&I needs right now. So we're not exactly on any one of these, but because that's not the intention, to be exactly on any one of them, but to be able to see some of where we are and be able to kind of change things up as we go on. So that's one of the goals with scenario planning. And I think it's important. And it's kind of cutting edge when you talk about what we're doing versus what some of the other Western states are doing. And they're looking to to some of the work that we've done on as they're looking towards the future. So I'm not going to read through all of these, but I get to talk a little bit on the politics of this and probably disclose more than I should. But I wanted to make sure that you knew a little bit of the background on some of the water plan goals. So you can go through and read all of these. And a lot of these had a significant amount of effort put into the development of the goal. And then some of them were like, oh, we have to have a goal on this. And so a little bit of the dirty laundry is that it was only in the last few months that these specific goals were developed in the water plan. And so I personally believe that, and in our next go round, we're going to have to take a harder look at this, because so much of what we did when we were developing the water plan was focused on community support, community buy-in, input from as many people as we could get input on. And some of these goals didn't have as much input as I would like. And I think that's one of the things that happens is if it's a first ever water plan, you know that there are going to be first ever mistakes. And this would be one that I think is amazing work. And this is, these goals are all incredibly important, but if I had to do it again, I would give us more time to develop them with the community support buy-in, because I think that's where we needed, really when we're asking people on the ground to put their backs into getting the water plan and the goals in the water plan done, we need their buy-in on every piece of it. And so as we look towards the future, that is something that I'm wanting to make sure that I'm aware of. Let me go back and show you one goal. So one of the goals was to sustainably fund the water plan by raising $100 million in revenue annually starting in 2020. Our agency does pretty well. We can almost support ourselves if we were just doing work. But when we talk about funding projects and things like that, you can't do that without a significant level of additional funding. And so remember that goal as I move to the next slide. And oh, darn it. I went backwards. Give me a second. There you go. So some of the things that we do at the agency is do grants. Now, I talked about all of the work that we get done, and CSU is actually gets some grants from us, and we work in partnership with them. But it's not only to CSU. It's for water and water folks across the state, folks that are interested in water, have some intelligence when it comes to water, but also water providers or agricultural users or environmental users. And so we give grants for agricultural type projects, conservation and land use type projects, engagement and innovation projects, environment and recreational projects, water storage and supply projects, all of those things we talked about. There's a grant someplace that can help support those types of projects. But we also do low interest loans. And those are critical not only for the borrower, but the interest created from those help support a lot of our programs. And so I think it's always important when you see a project be built and they borrow money from the CWCB, it probably affects multiple other projects in different ways, because we use that money to potentially help other recreational projects or environmental projects. But when I want to go back to the last thing, and we talk about that funding goal that was in the water plan, and so you may have remembered those who voted, I think it was last year, the time is kind of weird at this point, but you may remember referendum DD being on your ballot, and that's the tax that is gained from gambling and how it should be used. And so a bunch of smart people got together and said, let's earmark some of this for water. And so we did. And some of the good news on that is that I think it's May, June, and July, really the first months that became legal, there was $59 million spent on gambling. That may not be the good news part of it, but the good news part of it is we've got about 240,000 estimated to come in for water projects. And that's when there's no sports happening, really. And so I really am looking forward to what we can do when we get closer to normal. So that's kind of exciting news. And it's just a drop in the bucket of our water plan goal, but it is a first drop, and it's a big drop, and it does raise awareness of the importance of water to the people of the state of Colorado. So I think that is all I have. I'm sure there are tons of questions, and I am going to stop sharing my screen so I can see the comments.
Thank you, Becky. That was wonderful. Interesting. I was talking to somebody else today, and I talked to him about unsharing their screen, and he said, you know, that's got to be a new word in the dictionary, because a year ago, nobody would have understood what unsharing meant. Becky, I appreciate you talking about CSU and the grants we've done. One of the most recent reports to come out, and I don't know if it's public yet or not, because I think it goes in front of the board here in September, in a couple of weeks, is the ATM report, or alternative transfer methods. And I think it's something that people would be very interested in that what helped in that report is the people who put this together defined alternative transfer methods, which used to mean a lot of things to a lot of different people. And you had mentioned that definition, so I appreciate that. One question I have for you, Becky, is having been in your job, I know that policies are interesting, and the water plan was quite a haul, but whenever you deal with policy and water policy, you have to deal with politics. And specifically in Colorado, a couple of different twists on that. There's this constant east slope, west slope tension. And then you also have the tension between the executive department and the legislature. And I know that played out a lot in the water plan. How did you get the East Slope and the West Slope to all agree that the water plan should be supported?
Oh, I don't know. How much more time do we have? I think it's important to remember, like, you can't ask a question about politics and not recognize that where the water plan came from was somewhat political. And so when you have an executive branch basically dictate what has to happen, there's always going to be someone that says that is not smart, or that's a horrible idea, or you're not going to take into account this and this and this. The water plan was no exception to that. And I think one of the ways that we dealt with that kind of executive mandate piece of it was that I have to go back to those basin implementation plans. That wasn't necessarily the original idea. So the original idea didn't say, hey, let's go and make sure we solicit 30,000 public comments. Let's make sure we go back to the ground and get the people that we know knows this. That wasn't the original idea. The original idea was only here, write a water plan. There was no script on how to do that. And so when you saw the tension between the executive branch and the legislature, we knew we had to somehow include them. And so I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But when you saw that first part, that first political kind of unsettling, that why would an executive branch mandate what we're supposed to do? I think that caused myself to take a look back, and then also I think it caused some of the leadership on the water plan to say, okay, maybe our original ideas weren't fully thought out. Let's think about this a little bit deeper. And so if something is working, like going back to the ground where people know what they're doing and know what they want their future to look like, why not go back and do that? But also to have a real public process. And the legislature plays into that too. And I'm going to talk about that in just a second. But I think one of the things that we have to remember as we talk about water, water policy, our water future, is if you're going to take public comment, you better take it and not just have people write in. Jennifer knows me, but not everybody on here knows me. And I don't want to do anything for looks. And so I think what's important when you talk about public comment is, can it make a difference? And so I think that was one of the things that we did that built clout. First, the basin implementation plans. And then the second was how we did public comment. It had to be manageable. And so we released things and took public comment on them in a reasonable fashion. We didn't release the whole 500-page document. We had a schedule that came out that released certain chapters at certain board meetings, and we took public comment. And then we showed on a spreadsheet. Had I known the amount of public comment that was going to occur, we would probably not have done it this way. But you showed how each individual comment did or did not make a difference. And I think if you really care about your public and your people, you need to actually make sure that the things that they say make a difference. And so that was one of the things that I think helped us on the political level. And then there was a significant amount of outreach that had to happen to the legislature because they weren't considered involved. And so they did a bit of their own public outreach. But again, it's something that we have to think about in the future. And I'm writing a note to myself because I want to make sure that we're doing that again in a better way than we did. It was more of a bit of an afterthought. And that's not fair. It's not fair to our legislators. But the legislators traveled around the state and also got public comment. And then we pulled that back in to the final edits on the water plan. And I think that that was some ways that we dealt with that. So that's it on that question.
I just cannot imagine writing a comment to every comment. And that's an incredible piece of work, but that's also where your credibility was risen, because people knew that they were being heard. And that's always an issue in the kind of job that you have. People don't want you to just nod your head. They want you to really think about it. And you guys did that in a mega way. Anybody else have a question? Here's a question from Reagan. What's the state of Colorado's biggest concern on the Colorado River currently? And how does the drought and COVID-related budget shortfalls play into the Colorado River?
Oh, Reagan. I think we're obviously looking towards a future and the renegotiation of the 07 guidelines. And that's definitely one of our biggest concerns on the Colorado River currently. And we're looking forward and thinking about how we do that. And the drought exacerbates that even further. And because when we talk about negotiations with other states, it's a little bit easier to be in times of plenty rather than times of drought. But I also think there's a benefit that we know the worst case scenario, or what we hope is the worst case scenario. And if we keep that in mind as we're thinking about the renegotiations, I think we may be better off. As it relates to budget, I talked a bit about demand management and that work that's going on there. All of our budgets have been hit. Every single state agency in some way, shape, or form, the universities in some way, shape, or form have been hit by budget shortfalls. Do I think our hands are tied because of that and that we're at a disadvantage? No. I feel like we're going to have to work harder. We're going to have to work smarter and know that all the other states are in the same predicament. If we were the only state that didn't have the resources to adequately get the data prepared as we go into these renegotiations, I would say this is horrible and we need to figure this out. But every state is in the same situation right now. And I think us all coming in drought and with low budget numbers, we may be more open to talking and having real discussions.
Becky, on the Colorado River, I believe that the Bureau of Reclamation put together a report looking at what the effects have been or how successful the guidelines were. I don't know how to say that exactly. Mm-hmm. And is that something that people can access now, or is that still a work in progress?
I think it's still a work in progress. You're talking about the 7D report?
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. And so that should be pretty soon. I don't have the exact date in my head even right now, but it's pretty soon. And so looking at the effectiveness of that, and that was really a Bureau of Reclamation led effort. And we had some input, and we always want folks to focus on the upper basin, the Wyoming, Colorado, Utah, New Mexico kind of perspective on that. But and so a lot of our input has been in relation to that. And we'll be taking a hard look when that comes out. We have given comments as a state and as seven states, actually, on what that looks like and what the Bureau should be focusing on.
Also, I want to mention, Nancy put it on the chat, that the ATM report that we talked about is on the Colorado Water Center's website, if you want to take a look at that. Any other questions out there for Becky? Oh, they're going to let you off easy, Becky.
Oh, I don't like it. I always take that as I wasn't interesting.
No, we covered a lot of material in a short amount of time. I would mention that we're going to have somebody here from CDPHE, Nicole Rowan, is going to be talking about what they've been doing. We'll have the state engineer here, Kevin Ryan. So people will have the opportunity to hear from them and how they interact with you. And we also are going to have some recreational folks. And I thought we might step back, Becky, and talk a little bit about the InStream Flow program and how that's developed over the years. It started in the 70s, and it has grown to a very robust program. How do you see that working for the next few years?
So I think Jennifer, you probably know as much about the InStream Flow program for sure as I do, if not more. And so that's one of the things that as I'm looking into the future, how do we make sure to protect that program, get that? When you talk about budget concerns, those are one of the programs that I say we don't want anything to become less important because of budget concerns. And when I talked about all of our all of the things we do being of equal importance, it's because they all fit in to each other. And so what that looks like in the future, I probably want to spend some more time thinking and making sure that we're moving towards that goal. We've had some pretty amazing successes with that program of recent with Himes Creek and specifically and some of the huge success that's come from that and really bringing back what we considered an extinct species or being part of making sure that there's flows in a segment of the river that we found what we previously thought were extinct species in. is huge. And so that's no understatement for the important, there could be no understatement of the importance of that program. But that being said, how all of these programs fit together is something that we're going to have to think about in the future. And that is one that's incredibly important to me.
So if a student was interested in learning more about CWCB, can they contact you?
I love it. And I hope, I love when people contact me. It sometimes takes me a little bit to get back, but I always do. And I like to buy coffee if we're allowed to go out and have coffee. But I will gladly do that. And also if they end up writing papers or something like that, that's always helpful. And so, you know, when we talk about the future, we have to include the future in our conversations. And so if we want to think about different ways of doing things, we have to include different people. And so that's where I see the students' roles playing, is because student becomes teacher at some point. And that's, if we need to be looking towards the future for our answers.
I appreciate that. I think it's important, since we weren't able to meet in person and people could introduce themselves, I wanted to let them know that you'd be open to communicating with them online.
Yeah. And Jennifer, you feel free to give any of them my cell phone number. I'll make sure you have my work one, not my personal one, because you have my personal. But I would love it. So thank you.
Becky, that was wonderful. I really appreciate your time. We have quite an audience here, and it looked like we had about 40 people on. So thank you so much. And to all of you that joined us, there's no class next week. It's a holiday. And the week after next, we will have Brad Wind here, who is the director of the Northern Colorado Water Conservancy District, to talk a little bit about water development in eastern Colorado. So to all of you, thank you, and have a good evening.
Thank you, and thank you to CSU. Thank you.
Thank you.